I'm Imani Evora, and you are listening to the We Are Made podcast, a Black creative series. Stories are an invitation into both who we are and what we stand for. The traces of Black experience throughout history that has allowed us to reclaim the makings of our greatest gifts, creation. These are the stories of Black creatives and curators. Today on the We Are Made podcast, I'm joined by visual artist Chiffon Taylor. Raised in Delaware by her grandparents, she spent a large amount of time with herself and older Black women. Led by curiosity and imagination, she slowly found her forms of identity shaped in the archives of her family's photos. She compared the times and her ability to use art as a means to expression. As a result, she slowly began to come into herself, the stepping stone to coming home. Introducing this week's origin story, Chiffon Taylor.
I grew up as an only child, primarily raised by both of my grandparents here in Wilmington, Delaware. And because I was the only child, you know, to grandparents, I spent lots of time, not alone, but, you know, with myself. And so my grandmother kept me occupied with lots of creative and crafty things. I did lots of, you know, writing and making and popsicle stick crafting as a small girl. And I never participated, you know, in like team sports or things like that. I did spend lots of time, you know, with my grandmother and her sisters. And I spent lots of time in church. Like so many other, you know, young Black folks, I was in Sunday service and Wednesday Bible night service and, you know, choir rehearsals and Saturday foot washings. And so, you know, when I think about who I am presently and, you know, really what my work taps into presently, it really does all follow back to those beginnings with my grandmother and spending a lot of time just with older Black women and spending time and, you know, religious and really spiritual spaces, and also being really tapped into the idea of, you know, expression and imagination as a small girl.
After joining a nonprofit as a graphic designer, she began to develop her relationship with color. Finding that writing was no longer allowing her the full expression, she turned to collage work, developing her obsession with women of her grandmother's time and the Hollywood greats.
One, you know, my origins as, I think, even a graphic designer were really by mistake. I was working in a nonprofit space, in a very small nonprofit here in Wilmington, Delaware. And I think for anyone who's ever worked in nonprofit spaces, you wind up doing a little bit of everything in those spaces. And the program that I was managing, I wound up, you know, just making a lot of the marketing collateral, like a lot of the marketing materials. And so I just really learned on the fly very quickly, you know, to do design, and then moved on to, you know, several roles, you know, after that, just because I developed an eye for, you know, kind of like colors and fonts and, you know, all those really basic design elements. And so it was something that I'd really, you know, fallen into by accident, but I'd really, you know, grown to love, and my career started to turn in that particular direction. And so I had this software kind of at my disposal and wanted to figure out other ways for me to be creative with that software. And I think at that particular time, I was writing, but the writing, I didn't feel fully expressed in the writing. And I didn't have the, you know, experience of being a visual artist or access to materials. And I was also a mother, and so I had to find time to make art, you know, with the resources that I had. So I started making collage work in Photoshop and was really pulling from kind of those early memories of my grandmother and her sisters and developing this obsession with women of that particular time when they were younger, right? The 50s, 60s, I became really obsessed with women of that particular moment, further obsessed with, you know, Black women in Hollywood at that particular moment. So a lot of my early works feature, you know, like Pearl Bailey and Joyce Bryant and these really icons of Black Hollywood, Dorothy Dandridge. And so I'd also just, you know, developed an obsession around them as well. And so I think that one of the things that, you know, I loved about being able to create digitally was, I think as a designer, you do develop obsessions with just like precision and things being clean and things having, you know, very high resolutions. And so that was the thing that was offered to me digitally. I really felt like I had control over the materials that, you know, that I was working with in that space. And as I continued to do that work digitally, I became really curious about analog, you know, hand-cut collage. And so, you know, I had read about a number of artists, including Lorna Simpson at that particular time. And her work was, you know, so just deeply resonant because of, you know, the source material that, you know, she was working with, and wanted to tap into, you know, to that space. And I think once I moved to analog work, I still wanted that precision, right? I still wanted that exactness to translate in my work. And I was really worried that I wouldn't be able to do that because you're cutting and you're gluing and things lay down and then they don't lay down and they lift up. And it was really, I don't want to use the word jarring because that feels dramatic, but it was a different experience at first because I didn't have the same kind of control, right? I didn't have, you know, the same amount of, you know, manipulation that I wanted to, you know, over the materials. And so what I found was that I took a more, I think, minimal approach with the hand-cut work as opposed to the digital. So I think my hand-cut works are more minimal, one, because, you know, I don't want to do too much overstating in that work, but also because that's the thing that, you know, feels comfortable for me in terms of dealing, you know, with the materials. So I think that now I've reached a place with the digital and hand cut work where they're deep complements one another. And my digital work, I think, is less concerned with precision and is more concerned with the kind of storytelling that I wanted to do with the analog work. And so they have both, you know, offered so much to each other. And at the beginning, I think that they were very distinguishable. But I think as over time, as I've grown as an artist, it's hard to tell, you know, which of my works are digital and are not now, I think.
Chefon's work began to introduce her curiosity to themes. Between the borders of narratives, memory, and history, there were reflections of the revival of Black womanhood. Her discoveries within images of her grandmother's past only grew her interest to want to know who these women were.
I can pinpoint it. And so, like I said, I do think it was probably always just kind of like bubbling there under the surface because I did grow up, like I said, with my grandmother and her sisters. And they were just such like dynamic women. My grandmother is still living. A few of her sisters who I grew up really close to, you know, are no longer living, but they were just such dynamic women, right? And they were always at my grandmother's home and they were always laughing and talking and spent lots of time watching them, you know, in church. And but I still felt like I didn't know who they were. And so I do remember one year I went to visit an aunt and uncle and there was a photograph of my grandmother and her youngest sister. And it was dated August of 1967. And my grandmother was 27 at the time. And so I think I was like around that age. Like I might've been approaching 30 when I discovered that photo. And I was just watching I was just looking at this photo, and it's just a photo of the two of them on a sofa, just kind of like heads back in laughter. And I was so curious about, you know, what their lives were. And so at that point, I started to write a small collection of poetry on Anterior that really tried to fill in the gaps of memory about these women that I didn't know. So really just really rich reimagining of who I thought they were and what I thought they were doing at that particular time. And I had a rough time writing it. It was like I said, I didn't feel fully expressed in the language. And that's when I started to do collage work. And so that photograph is really, you know, the catalyst for the work that I do now, that photo of the two of them and just that curiosity, you know, about who they were or who they wanted to be in that particular moment. And so, you know, I watched my grandmother, you know, who's 81 now, over the years, but I've always only known her as my grandmother, right? I never knew her as a small girl or as a teenager, you know, as a young woman who was mostly concerned with herself, right? I never had an opportunity to know her, you know, in that way. And so I think that was the question that was the catalyst for the work that I do now.
When we often think of a memory, it's described as a moment that has already passed. To Chefan, it represents something different. It's a reminder of the opportunity she has to come back to who she is, a guide to who she has the ability to become.
For me, like traveling the memory really is about arriving back at myself. And so it's not about trying to kind of forge or craft a narrative about someone else. It's really about getting back to me. It's really using memory as a guide to dreaming, almost. And I think the thing that I have encountered recently is not just the traveling of the memory and understanding kind of like fears and desires and that piece. It's also about, you know, what happens when you kind of stumble in the gaps of memory and you have to fill those things in. And so I think so much of my work now is really about filling in the gaps of memory that are relevant to my own dreams, my own fears, my own desires. And I think that's where the work gets hard for me, because as exciting as it is to travel the memory, if I am talking about it coming back to myself, then at some point the work does become about me. So I can't contemplate the fears and dreams and desires of my grandmother and her sisters and my foremothers all the time. Sometimes it has to be about the contemplation of my own fears, my own dreams, my own desires. And centering those things is frightening for me. It's terrifying. And so I think that traveling the memory has done lots for, you know, my work and my practice as an artist. I also believe that I'm also responsible for doing, you know, my own deep, you know, inner work, shadow work, whatever it is that, you know, you want to refer, you know, to it as. And I think that that's the thing that all artists, you know, have to contend with, is that I think that, yeah, we do gaze upon kind of the lives and the experiences of others. But, you know, at some point, you definitely wind up, you know, looking back at yourself. And that's tough. That's tough.
At the root of Chefan's desire to unpack the memories of the past, she discovered her search for home, easily learning that sitting with the story of others allows her to feel safer in her own.
You know, and I also think the work that we choose is always about some sort of self-healing, for sure. And I think even though, you know, I had the experience of being raised by loving grandparents and being an only child, I think that there are things that, you know, I also wrestle with. And so the idea of connecting to these memories makes the idea of connecting with these memories helps me cope at moments with when I'm might be contemplating what it meant to be kind of neglected or what it meant to be, you know, abandoned, you know, as a kid by other adults, you know, in my life. And so I think that I'm always kind of searching out these memories in deep comfort of little Siobhan. And I think that that's something that I discovered in my process, in that interview process with Black Archives, you know, in Adobe. This really was about me trying to get back home all the time. Like, that's really, like, that's what I really feel like is happening all the time. And so I create work that I want to be held by. And I think that oftentimes the response to my work is that, and it is because I do think that I want to be able to kind of sit in the work and feel comforted by it and feel held by it. And so those memories of my grandmother and her sisters and my grandfather and home and these places that I visited when I was a small girl, those are all things that hold me. So I think especially with everything, you know, as I gesture wildly, that's happening, you know, in the world, I think we all are all reckoning with that desire, you know, to be held by something for sure.
As Siobhan grew into an adult and soon after into a mother, her work and environment began to reshape. She was finding new ways to build her own home by recreating what home looks like for both her and her family.
So I think, you know, in addition to the work, because I think, you know, the work allows for real world application, right? That's what you learn from the work. And so I think, you know, being an adult and being able to build my own home, you know, both metaphorically and physically, I think is also helpful. You know, I have a 14-year-old son, and, you know, I just got engaged, so I'm planning to get married. And so, you know, I really am having a moment where I get to imagine, you know, what home, you know, looks like for me, what it looks like for my family, not just my immediate family, but also, you know, the other family around me, and choose to host holidays, you know, begrudgingly so, but choosing to do so because, you know, those are the ways that, like, you know, I want to continue to build home. That's the biggest thing is, you know, just growing older in adulthood and saying, okay, you know, I get to, you know, build what, you know, what home looks like for me.
After the passing of her grandfather, he left behind a valuable asset, his camera. The very camera that captured the moments of their family's history and the tool that would continuously support Siobhan's journey moving forward.
I think currently the conversation, you know, between me and my work has pivoted a little away from, you know, my grandmother and her sisters. And my grandfather has come into deep focus in my practice. And so my grandfather, he passed in 2019. And, you know, I understood him in my life as my father. And when he passed, I was doing some real spiraling around my relationship to daughterhood and what I understood about fatherhood in the ways that my world was rearranged with his leaving. And so being a couple years out from his death and thinking about the ways that, you know, I've grieved him and I've, you know, been able to revisit, one, the photographs that he had taken of my family over the years. And I also have in my possession the camera that he took those photographs with. And so I have silently, very silently, very privately been taking photos on that camera of his as a way, one, to, you know, just really stay connected to him. But I think also to really connect with photographs that he left. And he left some really incredible images of the women in my family and his children and just kind of like these landscapes. And so I have been working with those photographs digitally to create some new collage work. So I've really been exploring the ways that I believe my grandfather, you know, impacted me as an artist.
And in closing, advice for fellow Black creatives.
Maybe a lesson more so than a piece of advice or a note, perhaps, that art and creativity are for your own liberation and self-discovery first.
This episode was brought to you by We Are Made Radio, produced and edited by We Are Made Studios.